May I speak in the name of God, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Margaret Wheatley is a current consultant and writer on the task of leadership in our contemporary context. And she writes about joy as an experience of connection and communion, presence, and grace. Not in separate special places, but within the context of the ordinary round of our everyday lives. And she notes how it's possible to have joy in moments of great suffering, noting that it is in the pursuit of happiness that we estrange ourselves from joy. In the pursuit of happiness, we estrange ourselves from joy. And she speaks of joy being the same as sadness, for both states embrace us. They embrace us with an energy that takes us beyond the physical. Laughing or crying, it doesn't much matter. And perhaps this seems so paradoxical as to be untrue, until we realize that joy and sadness are both states of self-transcendence. When we lose our connection to the transcendent, we are left with the tyranny of the self, a state of profound disenchantment. Faced with a birth or a wedding or an anniversary, we're captivated by joy. In the face of a death, a disaster, a tragedy, either personal or of epic proportion, sorrow and sadness capture us as we suffer with, console, and love one another. The joy we so long for may not be found on mountaintops, but it is found somewhere. It's not the distance that separates us from a life-enhancing encounter with God, but our preoccupation with ourselves. It's our self-centeredness that makes self-transcendence impossible. I'm a great disciple of the Canadian philosopher Charles Taylor. And in his wonderful magnum opus, A Secular Age, he contrasts the year 1500 with today. And he notes that in 1500, it was impossible not to believe in God. And he contrasts that with our experience today, where it seems to be, for many, many people, impossible to believe in God. And he charts the route of travel that our Western culture has taken from the impossibility of unbelief to the impossibility of belief. And in this long 400-year emergence of what we refer to as our secular age, Taylor notes a gradual transition from the age of enchantment to the age of disenchantment. Disenchantment denotes our loss of connection with the transcendent. And when connection to the transcendent is lost, we are all left with simply ourselves. And we find ourselves center stage in the drama of life. And this is a place of great spiritual loneliness and disenchantment. drawing on Taylor's distinction of the enchantment and disenchantment mindsets, God is often frighteningly present to the enchantment mindset through the material of ordinary life, in the material substance, places, objects. God is encountered powerfully. Divine power not only inhabits objects and places, but it fills and it disturbs the relational spaces that separate one person from another. God is made uncomfortably known in the sweep of great events through the unfolding epic that is the story of history. The enchanted mindset understands God's presence in spatial terms of up and down, in and out. The encounter between the divine and the human takes place in the laborious journey up to the mountaintop, where God dwells in self-revelation of blinding light. Yet at the same time, the mountaintop in the enchanted mindset is a place concealed by thick cloud. What comes to be known there cannot be spoken about elsewhere. On the mountaintop, Peter, James, and John experienced an epiphany of Jesus, clothed in his divinity as the Christ. This is a fleeting experience, no sooner glimpsed than it's gone, forever eluding their desire to capture and contain it. Then the disciples must negotiate the even more perilous journey down the mountain, carrying the experience they've just had. They must carry the remembrance of what they have seen, and yet, at the same time, practice a kind of forgetting. Events on the Mount of Transfiguration are only a midpoint in the longer process of that leads to the final act of Jesus' ministry. And it seems that in the spiritual life, peak experience is only a means to and not an end in itself. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Today, we do not look for God within the material fabric of the world of time and space. The acceptance by past generations, whose enchantment-shaped expectations of encountering God in material objects and places, is now firmly rejected by us as superstition. Nevertheless, the question remains. It's not, does a separate spiritual dimension exist, but where and how does it exist for our modern disenchanted mindset? Spatial references, as I said, of up and down don't work for us in the same way that it did for biblical writers and for past generations. For us, God no longer is found in the mountaintop. Heaven is no longer up there. Hell is no longer down there. Yet perhaps the metaphors of in and out still work for us. For a modern imagination, the spiritual realm is best conceived of as a parallel dimension that interpenetrates with time and space. And so when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said he had been to the mountaintop, no one assumed that he had actually climbed a mountain. The mountaintop now becomes the metaphor for the possibility of a different order of experience, one that challenges our acceptance of the absence of the spiritual in lives given over to a preoccupation with ourselves. And so we may no longer find God in and through the material world in quite the same way as the biblical and generational ancestors did. Yet despite this, God remains emotionally and experientially available to us. The paradox is that while we reject the enchantment as superstition, no generations crave with a greater intensity the desire for self-transcendence than we do. Magical realism, heroic superhuman sagas abound in Hollywood's works. Opioids, marketed as a solution for physical pain, establish a vice-like grip on our society as an escape route from our increasing levels of spiritual pain. And so Margaret Wheatley speaks of joy as an example of a transcendent experience available to us in the here and now. Joy is able to encompass delight and sadness. For joy is not happiness. Happiness is a very one-sided experience. Happiness is vulnerable and can easily be destroyed because it is the product of our own self-preoccupation. Joy radiates outwards, opening new pathways for interconnection and relief from our self-preoccupation. So here's the clue. For us today, transcendence is found not in special places set apart, not in high mountaintop places. Transcendence is found in the web of interconnectedness, one with another. We transcend the limited confines of our self-preoccupation, not into the emptiness of an elevated bliss, but into the joy of being fully present for one another. Wheatley reminds us of the great 19th century Bengali poet and spiritual teacher, Rabindranath Tagore, who wrote, "I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted, and behold, service was joy." The Transfiguration story is the halfway point in Mark's account of the life and times of Jesus of Nazareth. It marks the transition point from preaching and teaching in the Galilean countryside to his final and eventful journey to Jerusalem. The season of Epiphany, which comes to its end today, began with the visit of the Magi and the baptism of Jesus. And it ends with the Transfiguration. These mystical revealings bookend the season of revealing. And from here on, we move into a different section of the spiritual life. the landscape becomes rocky and desert-like as we journey down the mountain into the season of Lent. Is there no better time than in Lent for us to renew our engagement with the struggle to move beyond our debilitating experience of self-preoccupation, our imprisonment in the mindset of the disenchantment self, and to open our eyes and to open our lives to the immediate here and now experience of the transcendent in those moments of joy and interconnectedness with one another. Amen.